You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
And they run it straight ahead. Oh, breaking it. No one in the secondary. It's going the distance. Jonathan Stewart. 60 yards.
Third goal. It's Stewart. Stacked up, driving, and he takes the Vikings with him. Across for the touchdown.
Duke's got time. Now he's breaking down. Back pedal to get away from it. Off his back foot, he finds the man wide open. Funchess for the touchdown. And he goes down the field, and he is intercepted. He is picked off by Worley. Keenum in the Vikings. First play of the second half. And he was hit when he threw it by Addison. And now the ball. Are they going to say it's a fumble? What's going on here? Rolling on the field is a fumble. 6 for 6 on this drive.
Oh, it's intercepted as it bounced off the chest of Diggs.
If he can knock it through. Here's four basket. Oh, that's ugly. I think Carolina got a hand on it. Second and 5. Newton. Wide open. Newton. Inside the 40. Inside the 20. And then has it. To the 6 as Wayne's tried to strip it away.
Carolina's touchdowns today have come on third down. Here they are, third goal.
Stewart! The ball came out! The ball came up to ruin a touchdown on the far side. They say he broke the plane.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's a melancholy Monday on the program with Sam Ekstrom and Sage Rosenfels. Panthers 31, Vikings 24. The 8-game winning streak comes to a close. Over 2 months without a loss ends yesterday as the Vikings lose their grip on the number one seed in the NFC. It's a playoff picture that now has a whole new outlook in light of the Carson Wentz knee injury, which we will get to momentarily. But Sage Rosenfels joins us. Sage, I know you were watching from the Twin Cities yesterday, and maybe you can feel the sadness emanating from all of its residents with Minnesota losing just for the third time all year.
I would rather be a Vikings fan today than an Eagles fan today. Mm-hmm. The Eagles lost their starting quarterback, I would assume, for the entire year. First reports of an ACL injury by Carson Wentz. So the Vikings played, usually you play 60, 70 snaps on offense and defense and about 30 or 40 on special teams. I would say of those 150 or so snaps, the Vikings played very well for about 142 of them. And about 8 plays did not go their
Vikings
way.
Okay.
And made all the difference.
Sorry about the whooshing. ESPN has to autoplay their videos. Look at the numbers. Cam Newton, 13 of 25, 137, 1 TD, 1 interception, 38.6 QBR. Passing game didn't kill him. Rushing game. Let's subtract for a moment a 60-yard run and a 62-yard run. Panthers were 2.8 yards per carry on the ground, aside from those two runs. On third down, Panthers were 5 of 15 on third down. But the big asterisk there is 4 of those third down conversions resulted in touchdowns, including just a crazy scramble play by Cam Newton where he found Devin Funchess on a broken play. So you're right. It's a handful of plays. The third down defense in big spots failed where they usually come through. And the red zone offense on third down was not great either. Even though the Vikings were 50% offensively on third down, they settled for 3 out of 4 field goals in the red zone. The things that they'd been doing for 8 weeks just didn't happen yesterday. And even with all that, Sage Rosenfels, they still almost found a way to win that game late.
And they really should have won that game late. On Andrews and Deho's interception, when they got the ball down to inside the 20-yard line, 15 or so yard line, you got to be thinking, and the Vikings are down by 3, 24-21. You got to be thinking, you know, they have a chance to win this, be up by 4 here in a few seconds. And they just left too many points on the board in that game. Adam Thielen with 2 very rare drops at the end of the first half. That was 4 points. Stephon Diggs with a throw that Case Keenum missed him on. That should have been towards the pylon. It was inside. There's 4 points. Obviously, the missed field goal and obviously the missed opportunity after the Zendejo interception. So there were a lot of points left on the board yesterday. Despite all of that, they still had a really good chance to win that football game right down there near the end.
Yeah, and then there was another one where Case Keenum got sacked out of field goal range on the play where Riley Reiff got hurt. That's 3 points. And then the wild fumble call where the ball traveled 10 yards, they call it a fumble. That gifted Carolina 3 points. So I think we've now added up, what, about 16, 17 points that the Vikings could have had. And obviously every game has those type of swings, but most of those seem to be in the Vikings side of the ledger rather than Carolina's yesterday. I want to talk to you about the Thielen catch. I think the call is 100% correct in overruling it. I just think the rule might be a little questionable, but I saw Mike Zimmer yelling and F-bombing and Thielen slamming his helmet. I don't think they have any reason to be frustrated. They got the call right. They saw the bobble. Be frustrated with the nature of the rule, not the call that was made.
No, not at all. I'm not sure why Zimmer was so upset. I think Thielen was upset because he knew he dropped the ball. If you look at his reaction, I watched it a couple of times last night. I think I saw Ben Lieber had a sideline video of it. I mean, his instant reaction when he got up was not excitement.
Yes.
You could sort of tell that he knew that ball moved. He was most definitely on the white. People were on Twitter last night trying to turn that into a catch somehow, as if they haven't followed the catch rules over the last 10 years in the NFL. So definitely not a catch there. There's obviously the earlier drop. By the way, on both of those plays, something I wanted to bring up, that those north end zone plays, in particular the northeast end zone where those drops occurred, as Adam Thielen is looking back, he is looking right into the sun. And I hate using the sun as an excuse, but in a 1 o'clock, about 1:30 time, that sun is going to be directly south, a little bit southwest, really towards where the quarterback is throwing the football. And low in the sky in December, that ball was most definitely right in the sun, and you could sort of see it in the way Adam was trying to catch the ball. He was squinting a little bit, and I think that had an effect on him dropping those 2 big passes.
So catch rule, I don't actually have as much confusion about it as some people seem to have. I think the rules are pretty clear. Do you think the rule could be better? For instance, would you make it so that Adam Thielen has control, gets an elbow and a knee down in the end zone? Do you think the play should end there? Or does that open up too much gray area for if someone bobbles it out of bounds like Thielen did? Do you like the rule, or would you maybe soften it a little bit?
I like the rule the way it is now, and you know, we used to go through all these different rules, you know, 1 step, 2 step, does he make a football act, all these different things. At the end of the day, if you can't, you basically at this point, you need to catch the ball, get up and show the ball and have no, the ball can't move or anything during that time. And I think that is just the most black and white way to do it. And I think that's it makes it to me an easy decision. That was an easy decision. That was not a catch.
And then on the Keenum fumble, that's the other big controversial call. Again, I think by the letter of the law, it's right. Even though the ball is sort of sitting in his palm, it's the equivalent of somebody popping the ball up in the air and Keenum batting it with his hand. Even though it didn't leave the hand, there was no control there. And I think, again, they got that one right. As strange as it seems, it's a borderline call that they easily could have just said incomplete on the field. But in retrospect, I think they probably got that one right, too. And Aaron Rodgers, this is a couple of years ago when the Vikings were playing at Lambeau for the division. Aaron Rodgers had a very similar play that they ruled a fumble. The Vikings returned it for a touchdown. That was the exact same thing.
Yeah, when I first saw the play on the field, it looked a little odd. Obviously, the ball went, 12, 15 yards. But when you go back to that replay and you see that the ball was touched, to me, by the hand of the defender, right at the back of the throwing motion. I don't believe the ball was going forward, and it was very, very close. And I did find it interesting that the referee said that they confirmed the call.
Yeah.
They didn't just stay with the call. They actually confirmed the call. So my question is, let's just say it was just an incomplete pass originally called, and if the Carolina Panthers would have challenged it to make it a fumble, would they have overturned it? And you would think a confirmed call would have been an overturn and then obviously then a fumble. I don't think that would have happened. So I don't think it's a confirmed call. I think it's more of a they called it on the field that way. And they're gonna stick with it. So it was literally right at the point, milliseconds, and one of those things that was too hard to overturn.
Injuries were a huge deal yesterday, and maybe even more devastating, I think, than the loss itself, was the potential for Riley Reiff to be out for a while. He goes down with an ankle injury. Good news is it's an ankle, not a knee. He got up and appeared to be walking decently as he went off the field. The report was that he had a walking boot in the locker room. Now, I've seen guys with walking boots before, and then they go and play the next week. So that does not necessarily mean a guy is out long term. I think it's probably keep swelling down or something. Maybe you can shed some more light on that, Sage. But the offensive line looked like last year's offensive line without Reiff. And again, Pat Elflein didn't start. He had a shoulder issue. So they have Searles. They have Isadora in there. They have Easton in a new spot. Rashad Hill did not look good. It was a patchwork line, and Keenum took 6 sacks because of it.
Yeah, this offensive line looked for the first time as it looked in 2016. It was poor. They didn't run the ball very well, and obviously they struggled in pass protection. And you can see what Carolina did defensively. They blitzed on first down throughout the ball game. I would say over half, if not two-thirds, of all first downs in the game, there was at least one man blitzing, and they were more blitzing to stop the run, I believe. But on top of it, they were getting pressure when the Vikings decided to throw the football. A lot of one-on-ones in the pass protection, and that was the weakness of this team. So that's probably the biggest concern going forward. I'm not concerned about Keenum missing that ball to for a touchdown. I'm not worried about Adam Thielen's couple drops. I'm not worried about the fumble. I am worried about, more than anything, really, Riley Reiff, the left tackle, who has played very well this year, and one of the main reasons why this Vikings offensive line has been so solid. And obviously their center, Pat Elflein, you could see a major difference there. Even though Easton started the game, he's generally left guard. He started at center. So the whole thing was thrown off, and we shall see how long these injuries last, if they last for a week or two, not the end of the world, but if they last into the playoffs, that is very concerning for the Minnesota Vikings. That makes this game in the playoffs and getting a bye week even more important so this offensive line can get back at full strength.
Yeah, they're down 60% of their line right now. I would say Elflein, decent chance he comes back next week. He was limited in practice, which probably means he was close. Then Remmers, that's the big question mark, because he had a concussion for the first couple weeks. Then it turned into a lower back, so he aggravated something when he came back from the concussion, and he's never gotten back on the field. And he's kind of been stretching, but he hasn't really done much of practice the last few weeks. So we don't know about Remmers, and Reiff is obviously a big question mark. He's a tough guy, but can you play on a bad ankle? Who knows? So you hope you get at least one of those pieces back next week against what looks like a bad Cincinnati team who just got blown out by, of all teams, the Chicago Bears and cost us confidence points. But another bigger injury, Sage, is the Carson Wentz issue. You know, yesterday the Eagles go to LA and they win, but as you alluded to in the open, it feels like a loss in Philadelphia. They might have almost clinched the number one seed, and it still feels probably pretty hopeless there with Nick Foles now taking over for the foreseeable future. What does this mean for the NFC playoff picture?
Well, it completely changes everything. And obviously, Philadelphia, everyone's got 3 games left. And Philadelphia may have the first seed when we get here to the postseason. But I just don't know how far they can go with Nick Foles. I mean, he's one of the better backups, but he is a backup, and he hasn't played a ton over the course of the last couple seasons. And so that's a huge blow to that team. I still like where the Vikings sit. I believe that, these Vikings injuries, we'll know more today. I'm not sure if, Reiff is going to get an MRI or anything, but I like where the Vikings stand because their injuries don't seem to be major. They don't seem to be long-term. And I got to think that these guys are at some point will be back, and the Vikings will be in the playoffs. They're going to win at least one, if not two, if not all three of these final games. So they're going to be in the playoffs. We shall see what their seeding is going to be. It should be a really – the NFC is extremely fascinating, and the Carson Wentz injury really completely changed everything with that last night. And obviously the LA Rams are right there. Seattle with a big loss yesterday. Green Bay still sort of hanging on, but I just don't see them being a legit contender in the playoffs. But we shall see as these final three games, the final three game stretch carries on here.
Let me just take everybody through some of the tiebreaker scenarios to the best of my knowledge. So if the Vikings want the number one seed, they would have to go 3-0. The Eagles would have to go 1-2 because the Eagles are going to have the tiebreaker now in light of the common games record. Then the Vikings are in really good spot for that bye. They've got the Rams a full game back, and they have the, and Minnesota has the tiebreaker. The Saints a full game back. Minnesota has the tiebreaker. The real concern is the Carolina Panthers, who are 9-4 right now, and they have the tiebreaker over Minnesota. So you look at Carolina's schedule coming up. What do they have? Well, Carolina's got Green Bay next week. Who do you cheer for in that game? Probably cheer for Green Bay, honestly. Then they've got Tampa. Then they've got Atlanta. Vikings, I think, are still in excellent, excellent position for at minimum the 2 seed. They've got Cincinnati at home, Green Bay on the road, Chicago at home. I think 13-3 is really attainable. And if you look at this retroactively, Sage, the 5-game stretch they just endured, they go 4-1 in that stretch, including a 3-game road trip where they go 2-1. That's pretty good work by the Vikings, honestly.
Yeah, in particular these last three games on the road. And I believe we talked about, if they could go 2-3 out of those games, even 1-3, they may have the easiest stretch of games the last three of any NFL team. Two of them are completely done, the Bears and the Bengals. And then obviously then there's Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. And so I like where the Vikings are. They're 10-3. They're playing really good football. Just made a few mistakes in last week's game and obviously had those injuries along the offensive line.
So it feels like we go through this every week, but again, there's people whispering Case Keenum didn't play well enough yesterday. They need to start Teddy. How do you respond to that? And do you think Keenum has earned, a healthy mulligan after the work he's done?
He didn't. What did he do so bad in the game? I mean, you could say the first interception, he left it high and short. And it was an out and up. Thielen ran a good route, had a step, and the ball was thrown behind him, and it was intercepted. Okay. After that, the other interception, the ball was high, but that ball should not have been intercepted. That was a drop pass. And he did miss the one in the end zone, but he also had Thielen dropped a couple of touchdown passes, and then on the fumble, you really can't put that in the quarterback. I mean, he does a great job. Case Keenum does a great job of preventing sacks, getting his offensive line out of trouble, and sometimes he can't do that. And obviously, there was the pass fumble in that game. So overall, I thought Keenum played pretty well. Again, just made two or three mistakes, as did the majority of the rest of the team, it seemed like, in this game.
Yeah, to be honest, I would be stunned if they made the switch. I really would be. When you win 8, you get room for at least one loss in there. You get more grace from a head coach. It would be remarkable if they were to make that switch, but if they were ever going to make the switch, if they are intent on making the switch, this is probably when you have to do it. Again, just keeping the locker room, I think guys probably respect the loyalty when a coach sticks with a guy through a loss. You don't want to play afraid ever. And I don't know what kind of message that would send if you pull Case after one loss. What do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, it wasn't his fault that, Kyle Rudolph dropped that pass and Thielen dropped those passes and all those things. So if you're one of those guys and you're Kyle Rudolph, I might get benched because the right tackle misses the block and ends up being blamed on, and Kyle Rudolph gets benched. I mean, I think I agree with you about the loyalty thing. I think it's important that when guys are out there fighting and playing really, really good football, bad games happen, in particular by quarterbacks. Usually it's about one out of every, four games, a quarterback just throws a dud out there, just sort of the way it goes. And usually they lose the game, but sometimes really good teams actually win those games. Case Keenum has not thrown, had made dud games this year. He's played, very, very well, really at a Pro Bowl level, and didn't play great yesterday, but the whole team made a lot of mistakes.
All right, here's where we stand with the confidence picks. We both picked the Bengals. That, in retrospect, was a terrible decision, but who knew the Bears were going to put up 33? Trubisky had a great game. So we lose 95 there. I wanted to go with the Browns for a while, and we got it right with the Packers, but for three quarters, the Browns were the better team. Late fourth quarter comeback by Hundley. They win in overtime because of a terrible decision by DeShone Kizer. You got 80, I got 70. So that brings you within 5 points. Then the swing game. You took Detroit. I took the Bucs. It was tied in the fourth, and Detroit squeaks by Matt Prater, the game-winning field goal. So you get 140 right there. You had 80. I had 60 on the Bucs. That puts you ahead by 135, and we both missed the Vikings. So you now lead by 125 points. Congratulations. But quickly on the Packers game, I mean, was that the biggest indictment possible on the Packers, that they would get outplayed for three quarters by the Browns?
That was unbelievable. When I saw that score, I think I saw it as 21-7. I just could not believe that the Packers were getting beat that bad. And obviously, the missing Aaron Rodgers is a big deal, but the Vikings are missing Dalvin Cook and their starting quarterback from the beginning of the season as well, and seem to be doing pretty well. So I thought that was sort of an indictment on the general manager, on Ted Thompson, being that your starting quarterback goes down and all of a sudden you're losing to the worst team in football by two touchdowns. To me, that's an indictment on the general manager. You should be able to withstand, in particular against below average to terrible teams, an injury at the quarterback situation. So they end up pulling it off. The Packers pulled it off, came back, still in playoff contention, and I'm sure they will try to ruin it for the Vikings in 2 weeks.
And have you ever played in anything as bizarre as what was going on in Buffalo yesterday?
Yes, in Buffalo.
Really?
I played in almost the same. We played a game, Miami Dolphins at Buffalo, and the first play of the game, Ricky Williams runs for about a 75-yard touchdown. And I remember Zach Thomas, our middle linebacker, saying to me on the sidelines, 7 points, that's all we need. They're not going to score. Well, somehow Drew Bledsoe just caught fire. The first half, it was cold and it was windy and sleeting a little bit. But Bledsoe threw for like 200 yards in the first half, and we were losing. And then the snow came in the second half. And by the end of the fourth quarter, I was out there on the field handing the ball off to Travis Minor on a couple other running backs just to finish the game out. There was about a foot of snow on the ground. That lake effect snow just came flying in. It was absolutely unbelievable. They were trying to brush off the lines in between series during TV timeouts. It was absolutely incredible. And if I recall, it was a nightmare trying to get out of there, trying to get to the airport, trying to get the airport runway cleaned off, the plane de-iced. I felt like we were in Buffalo. It was like Groundhog Day. I think I took a nap on the plane and woke up and we hadn't moved anywhere. So it was one of those terrible scenarios, but that was bad from beginning to end. At least the first half was fairly clean when I played in that type of game.
Yeah, that Vinatieri 43-yard extra point, I don't know if you saw it, but to tie the game late in the fourth quarter, it basically started 10 feet outside the post and then curled back in and just snuck over maybe with 3 feet of leeway over the crossbar. It was the greatest extra point of all time. Adam Vinatieri, classic. He's a hero. So that's the show for the day. We'll have plenty more updates on injuries and all other things Vikings when Sage returns on Wednesday. Tomorrow I'll be back giving the report on what happens today at Winter Park, see if Mike Zimmer delivers any quotes. He was pretty curt yesterday after the loss, so we'll see if he opens up a little bit more. It's Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network.